Hi, I'm Adam Pacifico, and this is the Leadership Enigma podcast. So whether you're listening or watching us, welcome back. Do please check out the YouTube channel because we have over, I can't believe this really, 300 videos there for you. So this episode is powered again by good friend Kevin O'Leary, who's the CEO of Red Leadership and author of this book, Where the Evidence Takes Us. Now, this is actually an incredible memoir of a Scotland Yard detective with 30 years service. These are tales of hostage negotiation and covert operations to commanding the iconic London 2012 Olympics. As leaders, calm, fast decision-making, a fluid leadership style and a constant human-centered approach when everything and everyone is in utter chaos will win the day every day. Check out the show notes for more information about this wonderful book. So, with that in mind, today we are diving into the eye of the storm. Wars, elections, tariffs, AI disruption. It is a world of uncertainty for leaders and their businesses everywhere. And everyone is asking, how do we navigate this? So joining me today is Tom Stevenson, friend and head of investment at Fidelity and renowned financial commentator and one of the sharpest minds in relation to what's happening or what's happening next. I have to big him up. So this is an episode packed full of insights, strategies and some real world advice that every leader, entrepreneur and decision maker needs to know right now. Come back to me just after the break. Hi, I'm Adam Pacifico, and welcome to The Leadership Enigma, a world-ranked, award-winning podcast that's insatiably curious as regards what leaders do, how they do it, and importantly, why. We'll delve into the human doing, but even deeper into the human being and the power of human-centered leadership to drive sustainable change. So whether you're an entrepreneur, business owner, corporate executive, each week we speak to global experts, academics, rising stars, ambitious upstarts and disruptors, as together we will discover that success leaves clues. Tom, it's a huge welcome to the Leadership Enigma. How are you?
I'm really well, Adam, and it's so nice to be here with you. Thanks for asking me along.
We've known each other for a little while, so it was always a need to get you into the studio. And as the world has gone progressively more chaotic and more mad, that's when I called you up and said, Tom, it's time. Please come in and try and help us navigate through some of this. Before we get into any of that, just help us. How did you decide to or get into the world that you now exist in? The financial world, the investment world, the monetary world. How did that happen?
Yeah, it was a kind of roundabout route. I started out as a journalist, actually. Yes. I worked in financial journalism for, more than 20 years. And I got, you know, really interested in the big picture, you know, the macro economic picture, global markets, strategy. And then I ended up moving from newspapers.
Yes.
To an investment company, really kind of doing the same thing, just looking at the big picture, writing about it, broadcasting about it, talking to clients about what's going on in the world. And so it's a logical transition. It's just a different world, if yes. you like, but I'm doing the same kind of stuff.
Had you always wanted to go in that direction, or was it a little bit of serendipity on the way? Because sometimes people have a squiggly career before they get to where they land.
Yeah, I didn't really have a plan. I think
it's always the best way.
Yeah, I mean, I think most people don't have a plan. I kind of stumbled into it, but very happy that I did. I mean, I just find it so fascinating.
So let's talk about the work that you're doing at the moment. Just I know you're a financial commentator and you're trying to help as many people as you can really try and understand the global economic outlook. So I bet I've got some questions which are nigh on impossible to answer, but we can have a quick discussion about we can have a go at it, Tom. At the moment, I'm finding that clients, colleagues, us as a business, these are choppy waters. For a whole host of reasons. But just tell us a little bit about kind of your thoughts on just the global economic outlook at the moment. How would you even begin to describe it?
Well, I mean, you called it choppy. Yep. I think that's a good word. It's the word that I would grasp is unpredictable.
Right.
Chaotic. A lot of it is to do with, you know, obviously what's happening in the US. With the change of the presidency,
yes,
with the trade wars, with the tariffs, that is having a ripple effect all around the world. But it's not just that. You know, there was a lot other going on before Donald Trump returned to the White House. You know, there's a lot of global uncertainty. There's wars. There's climate change. There's huge change in things like AI. I mean, the world is going through a very turbulent state at the moment. So how's that translating into the global economy? Well, you know, in the short term, it is leading to a pretty sharp slowdown in growth. You know, we had the International Monetary Fund last week downgrading forecasts for the whole world.
I saw that.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, from the US to China to the UK, everywhere is slowing down. At the same time, inflation, which of course spiked up, you know, very high as we came out of the pandemic, it's coming back down, but it's still pretty high. It's still causing problems. It's causing policy problems for central banks because they look at slowing growth, but they look at high inflation and they're kind of contradictory. What you do to, if you sort one out, then it makes the other one worse and vice versa.
Yeah.
And then of course, you know, the whole backdrop is really affected by these trade tensions. Effectively, it's an unwinding, it's a breaking down of the whole framework, the whole global framework that's been in existence since the Second World War.
Right.
You know, that sounds dramatic, but you know, I don't think you can overstate the scale of the changes that are happening.
In your experience, you know, we've always gone through peaks and troughs or changes, however you want to describe it. Is it the most chaotic that you've ever experienced at the moment? Or is it a case that there's just so much happening all at the same time? So in your experience, how does this feel different or is this riding the wave?
It feels different to me. I mean, the thing is, it always feels it always feels really important when you're in the moment.
Yes.
You know, I mean, if you rolled back to the 1970s and, you know, you had very high inflation, you know, you had the Vietnam War, you had social upheavals, you know, you would have said, you know,
yeah,
we've never had anything like this. And it's true. But I think that we've been through a period over the last 20 odd years, well, no more than that, 30 years since the fall of the wall and, yes, and the end of the Cold War, we've been through a period of, I think, what we'll look back on as being a kind of almost artificially calm period in the world.
Right.
And I think that 30 year period, kind of golden age, is over now. And I think we are moving into a period of much more volatility. I think, you know, the globalization which dominated that 30-year period, it, you know, has ended.
It's over.
And so that is a completely different environment. And so we're slightly feeling our way. We're in the dark. And, you know, no one knows how it's going to end up.
I think that's one of the keys, isn't it? No one can really predict how this is going to end up. And leaders and their businesses navigating that ambiguity is always a massive challenge. Is there something, in your view, you feel really differentiates the time that we're in right now? Is it that AI digital piece or is it something else? Because we've been through wars before and we've been through recessions and we've been through inflation. So is there something that you feel is making this one slightly different?
Well, and we've been through massive technological change before as well. So, I mean, you know, exactly. I do think that AI is you know, I don't think that you can overstate the importance and the reach of AI, and we don't even begin to understand where it's going to take us.
Yes.
But it's enormously powerful. But you know, you could have said exactly the same thing about the invention of the motor car, electricity,
or the various industrial
computerization, the first industrial revolution, the knowledge revolution, all of these have fundamentally changed the world. But I think AI changes the world completely. So that is happening.
Yes,
but that is happening at the same time as the globalization which underpinned that peace and prosperity and stability is also fragmenting. So it's a much more fragmented world. And it's and I think the difference between now and revolutions in the past is the pace of change.
Yes.
So, I mean, you go roll back a couple of years and most of us weren't even talking about AI.
It's been around for longer than people think.
It has been around for a long time, but most people were unaware of it.
It wasn't in every sentence.
No, exactly. So I think the pace of change is dramatic.
There was Professor Jonathan Reichenthal, who has been a guest actually. I remember he said to me, we were talking about the fourth industrial revolution, and actually that's before the AI theme really broke. And he said to me that actually what we're talking about now is change at the speed of thought. Mm. And that really resonated with me. Mm. It's just so quick that you can be a global business, an iconic business, but you can be disrupted overnight. Yeah. And I think that's what's scaring a lot of people. And when I talk to CEOs, Tom, they always talk, he or she will say, they fear being irrelevant. And now they can be irrelevant very quickly. It's not something that's going to just chip away over years and decades. Yeah. This could be days.
And that is a huge... That is a huge challenge for leaders.
Yes,
And you know, I think you look at what's happening with policy in the US and rippling out to the rest of the world. It is the speed of change which is so unsettling. So, I mean, if you look at the tariff announcements that we've had in the last month. And then the speed with which they were reversed.
Yes.
That's an incredibly unsettling environment for anyone trying to run a business.
Yes.
And so I think, you know, what are the characteristics of leadership in this very rapidly changing world? Well, the ability to make speedy decisions is one thing. To make decisions on the basis of changing information. So, in other words, to be flexible is the second thing. And interestingly, if you look at Trump, I mean, he has both of those characteristics. He moves quickly and he changes his mind.
Yes.
And those can be positives, but they can also be negatives. So I think some of the other characteristics of leadership, which maybe he doesn't possess, which maybe business leaders need to possess, emotional intelligence.
Yes.
The ability to prioritize. So, you know, in a fast changing world, you've got to look at the long term.
What is long term anymore these days?
Well,
Tom?
The long term is probably. The long term is shorter than it used to be.
I mean,
if you look at the life cycle of companies, it has massively
compressed.
Well,
look at the S&P, for sure. It's like something like 14 years now or something crazy?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, the life cycle which was counted in decades is now counted in years.
Yes.
And that's true of the life cycle of a chief executive.
Yes.
That's compressed. Everything is compressed. And then, you know, as we talked about policy, you know, policy can be made and then 2 days later it's completely reversed. That's really, really unsettling. So the final dwelling on this leadership thing, I think, you know, the final thing is communication, the ability to communicate clearly and empathetically. I'm not running a business. I'm really glad I'm not running a business in this environment. I mean, that is a super challenging thing.
But you must
backdrop.
Be getting called in to lots of businesses.
Absolutely.
In order for the leaders, the boards, the XCOM to say, can you shed some light on some of this
order
to allow us a little bit more clarity to make a decision?
Yeah, absolutely.
I had Gary Ridge, who was the chairman and CEO of WD-40, sat exactly where you were not very long ago. And he said he learned from the pandemic that you don't make finite decisions in utter chaos. And so... It is that ability to pivot. It is that ability to actually stop and, if necessary, turn 180 and go the other direction.
Yeah.
Because just the environment suggests that must be the case.
Yeah.
Listen, we've talked a little bit about tariffs. What's the best way of describing tariffs in the simplest way for people to understand? What was kind of behind that? Has that in some ways created this ripple impact of chaos?
Yeah. Well, I mean, a tariff is a tax... on an import.
Yeah.
So what's it designed to do? Well, it's designed to do several things. One is to try and rectify the imbalances in the global trading framework,
which can be very historic.
Yeah, and there are good reasons for them. And you know, you can say, well, you know, XYZ country has been ripping us off for years. That's a very simplistic description of something. It's a choice. You know, America has chosen to participate in that global trading framework on the terms which, you know, it is a tax. It's partly designed to encourage the growth of manufacturing industry back home.
Internally.
Yep. And it's partly designed to raise revenue as well. Now, there are question marks over whether it will achieve any of those things, or indeed whether they are contradictory. And then the big question for me about tariffs is who actually pays? Who suffers? And I think that the economic consensus, which is not shared by the Trump administration, is that the price is largely paid by will be largely paid by American consumers.
And in fact, wasn't that the whole story around Amazon going to put a price increase for you, the consumer, on the website, which I know now isn't happening. But but to your point, it was exactly that, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That is
the reality. That is the, you know, it's a tax, but it is paid by consumers within the country. So it will be very interesting to see how this plays out. You know, another question mark is, you know, okay, we want to reshore manufacturing to the US. Is that really what Americans want? Do they want to do those jobs which are currently outsourced to Asia?
Okay.
Probably not. So, you know, I think there are so many unanswered questions about tariffs, but you know, and indeed, what we don't know is, you know, just how it will play out at all, because you know it changes every 5 minutes.
When I was watching this play out, and we had almost the theatrics of the board with all the tariffs on it presented, and I think there was it an island that just has penguins on it had a tariff associated with it. Part of me wondered whether this was a tool just to get people talking about the issue of tariffs and to, I don't know, in some ways reinvigorate the conversation about what may have been historically agreed upon to become more current. So part of me was like getting everyone to the table again to say we need to look at things, because the world's changed.
Clearly it's part of a negotiating strategy. I mean, you know, you look at the tariff situation between the US and China at the moment. Mm-hmm. Effectively, as the administration has admitted, it is totally unsustainable. You can't have 125, 145% tariffs on either side and expect there to be any trade at all. And both China and the US are dependent on having a trading relationship. So clearly it's unsustainable. Clearly, it will lead to negotiations, and that is
which may be a good thing.
Yeah, it's absolutely, and you know, I mean, tariffs are not all bad. You know, I mean, if there are inequities in the trading relationship, then a targeted tariff can address those and can sort it out. So, you know, I'm not saying that tariffs are per se a bad thing. But what seems to be hard to rationalise is the across-the-board tariffs, which basically will slow growth, raise inflation, and do all the things which actually, you know, the president was elected not to do. So, you know, I agree with you. I think that, you know, that there's always a question of, you know, how seriously should we take what he says? How literally should we take what he says?
Yes.
You know, this is part of a broader strategy.
What's the motivation behind it in relation to? I mean, that really takes us on to, you know, I hear this all the time. How do we manage risks in uncertain times? So, what should leaders and businesses be thinking about in relation to how they hedge against this volatility within the market and volatility within their own supply chains and volatility that their customers and clients are experiencing as well? Because as you said, no one is immune to this at the moment. It's global. How on earth do you manage that kind of risk?
Well, I think there are probably three things that you do.
Okay.
The first thing is you have a plan.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about the fact that no one knows how things are going to pan out. So therefore, you need scenario plans. You need to hope for the best and plan for the worst.
Right.
So you need scenario plans, and then you need contingency plans for those various scenarios. So, you know, planning has never been more important. I think the second thing which businesses obviously need to think about is diversification. So diversification of their risks,
yep.
Of their supply chains, of their target markets. You know, you can't rely on one outlet, one supply chain anymore.
One outlet is major risk.
It's a major risk. So have a plan, diversify. And then I think the third thing is the importance of financial security, having a cash buffer. So in my world of, yeah. of investment, you know, we often talk about the importance of having enough cash set aside so that you are not a forced seller. So if you're, you know, if you're
the proverbial rainy day,
yeah, but it's more than that. I mean, it's, you know, if you are drawing down money from, you know, your pension pot, and the market plunges, you know, you don't want to be a forced seller.
No.
You want to have enough of a buffer to see you through until things have stabilized. No different if you're running a business. You know, you need the cash buffer to pay down any debts or to meet your bills or whatever. So, you know, so I think those are the three things. Have a plan,
yep.
Diversify, and have the cash.
And if an organization, however big, doesn't have that cash buffer, does it make them vulnerable?
Totally.
Because then the sharks might well be circling, and you are
It's the equivalent of being a forced seller in investment market terms. Yeah. You know, you become a forced seller. You are no longer in charge of your own destiny.
So, you know, we mentioned the word investment. So what are some of the investment trends that you're seeing or possibly seeing now from 2025 going on amongst this volatility?
Yeah.
Are things starting to identify themselves as possible maybes?
Well, yeah, I mean, there are so many. I'll pick a few.
Sure.
I think the first massive trend we've talked about is AI.
Yeah.
I think this is so transformative. It's transformative in so many different industries. In many different ways.
It's everywhere.
It's everywhere. I mean, in the healthcare business, disease detection. In the financial sector, fraud detection, it's the ability to interrogate massive sets of data quickly. It transforms a lot of those detective functions in a company. It's huge in terms of the customer relationship, the ability to predict behaviors and to create better experiences for customers is completely transformative.
Okay.
And it's completely transformative in terms of efficiency. We all use, you know, Google Maps. I mean, you know, the efficiencies that creates in terms of, you know, navigating through, you know, problems in traffic. You know, it's you can extend that to the whole business process. So, you know, AI is a massive investment opportunity, but it's also a huge risk.
I was about to ask.
Massive amounts of money has been ploughed into the underlying infrastructure of AI in exactly the same way that massive amounts of money was ploughed into the railways in the 19th century. Airlines in the 20th century, you know.
Well, there's a new gold rush.
There's a new gold rush. And when there's a new gold rush, huge amounts of capital is misallocated and wasted. And it's entirely possible that the winners from AI will not be where all the money has gone. Just as 25 years ago in the dot-com bubble, you know, the major beneficiaries were not the telecoms companies that that put the pipes in, that did the electronic plumbing,
yes,
of the internet. They were the companies that adapted their business models to benefit from the internet, and even more so, the smartphone,
yeah,
when it came along. So, AI is a massive opportunity, but it's also a massive risk. Sustainability. The whole
a word that we
the
hear all
ESG,
the time.
ESG sustainability, yep, is a tricky area at the moment for reasons which maybe we can get into, but it's not going away. Climate change is real, and the need to adapt and to mitigate climate change is a huge investment.
And it's also a massively important subject for the newer generations coming into businesses.
Yep.
So, I'm finding as well that a lot of organisations are looking at this because that is very purpose-driven for people wanting to even work in a sector.
Yep, that is true. And it's not just, and it's not just climate change.
Yep.
It's the whole DEI agenda. There are issues at the moment there's something of a backlash. I'm thinking more in the United States. There's,
yes,
a backlash against ESG. Here in Europe, the issue is more about regulation and definitions. It's a tricky area, but it's a massive area, and it's not going away. So those are two key ones. Third one is, and those are obvious ones. People talk about those all the time. I think,
yeah,
a third one, which I think is really important,
yeah,
is just the crumbling infrastructure of the developed world. So, anytime you go to America, you drive around in America, the roads are shocking, the bridges are shocking. But it's not just America, it's the rest of the world.
Yes.
The developed world, which was created 100 years ago,
yeah,
is no longer fit for purpose. And the amount of infrastructure development that is required to bring us up to a state where we are fit for purpose is enormous. And in a world where, there are question marks over the value of financial assets.
Yes.
Mark Twain said, buy land, they don't make it anymore. The problem with money is that governments can print it.
Right.
And so that creates...
Well, we saw that during the pandemic, didn't,
yeah,
we?
And it creates question marks over the long-term sustainability, the viability of financial assets.
Yeah.
Real assets, property, infrastructure... I think that is a big investment opportunity going forward because, as I say, they don't make it anymore.
Do some people feel that's almost old school? Going back to the basics of land and property, people said bricks and mortar, put,
yeah,
your money into bricks and mortar.
And at times of crisis, that is often the case.
I mean, gold?
You go back to the 1970s.
Yep.
When, there was huge uncertainty and inflation. And the world went back to tangible things that they could touch. You mentioned gold. I mean, the gold, it's no surprise that the gold price went through $1,000 during the financial crisis. It went through $2,000 during the pandemic.
Yep.
It's now gone through $3,000 during this trade
crisis.
It went through $3,500. The gold price has doubled in 2.5 years. So, people are, and one of the reasons why they're doing that central banks around the world, the Chinese in particular,
yep,
are massively increasing their holdings of gold. Why? Because 2.5 years ago, Russia invaded Ukraine and its dollar-denominated assets were frozen by the US. The Chinese looked at that and they said, we don't want our assets to be in the hands of someone else. The Americans, gold is not, is not the liability of any government. Gold is gold, and so the Chinese in the last 2 years have increased the percentage of their reserves held in gold from 3% to 7%.
Right,
that's a massive. That's one of the reasons why the gold price. But it's a tangible thing, and it's like real estate, it's like infrastructure, and I do think that it is old school. but we are reverting to that to some degree because of the uncertainty of the intangible world that we live in.
Okay.
The final thing that I would I'll mention two more things quickly. Demographics. I mean, the aging world is a massive opportunity for investment. And then the final thing I would mention is...
Just help me with, when you say the aging population, what do you mean by that? Do you mean in relation to care, in relation to resources, infrastructure for the older?
Yeah, well, all of those
all
things.
All of the above.
I mean, silly little things like, glasses.
Yes.
You know, I mean, an aging population... We're both wearing glasses,
Side of the times, Tom.
Duh. You know, that is a fantastic, investment opportunity.
Okay.
So I think, demographic change, and it is happening, really quickly. If you look at those charts of the demographics, I mean, they are changing massively.
Okay.
So that is a big investment opportunity. And then the final one, which is a newer one, is really the end of what I mentioned at the top about the geopolitical framework which has essentially existed since the Second World War. The withdrawal of the US from the security blanket for Europe has created a complete sea change in the thinking about security and defense and infrastructure in places like Germany.
Right.
It's been a massive wake up call, and I think actually, people, a lot of people sort of talk about Trump as being a challenge to the world. I think Trump has actually, in some ways, been a gift to parts of the world. I think it's been a massive wake-up call for Europe.
Yeah.
Europe is now going to have to stand on its own two feet militarily and in terms of its defense and its infrastructure. It's a gift to China. China has neglected its internal domestic consumption. It's focused on an export-led economy.
Yes.
And that's changing. And that will create massive opportunities for an improvement in the lives of people in China as well. So, I don't want to sound negative, overly negative. I think there are lots of things to worry about in the world.
Yes.
But I think change creates...
opportunity.
Huge amounts of opportunity all over the world.
So a word that's in my mind, Tom, is diversification. Yeah. Businesses able to diversify, investors able to diversify for those peaks and troughs. But you've just talked about China, and I remember I had a couple of professors on an episode a while ago now talking about China. They've done a lot of work there. China, the factory to the world. What's the role that China, do you think, plays now in the global economy with everything that's going on?
Yeah, well, I mean, it continues to be the factory to the world, but I think that creates problems as well, and they're real problems. And I may not agree with everything that the Trump administration has done, but the one thing they have done is they have highlighted an imbalance in the global economy. So
right.
I do think that China will change and will become more focused on domestic consumption, and that will create a better balance in the world.
There's a shift coming.
There's a shift coming from the world that we've lived in for recent years has been one overstretched massive consumer in America, and one underspending, oversaving, overexporting economy in China. And I think that we will quite quickly move to a more balanced world in which we have two big drivers of consumption and drivers of manufacturing as well. So I think that is a good thing. And I think that China is in a position to be able to do that. We talked about cash buffers. It has that financial strength to be able to do that, to stimulate the economy, and we're seeing evidence that is happening.
So, we've talked about the government, the geopolitical, the business and the financial, but then the world is full of lots of regular people, just like you and I as well, who are nervous about what is going on, nervous about the things they have no control over, nervous just about the cost of living and can they now do the things that they want to do for themselves and their family on a day-to-day basis. What are your thoughts just in relation to people at a very human level just navigating the financial hurdles and the challenges that this macro picture is providing all of us, because everybody is feeling it?
Yeah, absolutely. And do you know what? It's interesting thinking this through, because, you know, all the things that I've said about the challenge for leaders of businesses, the challenges for businesses addressing this changing world and how to manage it, all of those things are exactly the same for individuals.
Yeah.
So, you know, have a plan. You know, what are you trying to achieve with your finances? Where do you want to go? What do you want your life to look like? If you don't know where you want to get to, you certainly won't get there. You know,
I mean, got to have a destination in mind.
You've got to have a destination in mind, and you've got to be flexible enough to change that plan as circumstances change, because undoubtedly they will. So have a plan. We talked about that with businesses.
We did.
Diversification. I mean, you know, what's happened in the last 3 months with in financial markets, which is my main area of focus, has been absolutely fascinating, because you roll back 3 months ago and everyone had bought in, everyone was drinking the Kool-Aid about, you know, what's called US exceptionalism. You know,
and the Big Seven,
the Magnificent Seven. It's going to, you know, for really since the financial crisis 15 years ago, America had led the way. That was going to continue. The whole trade tariff situation was going to entrench that.
Yes.
It was going to cement that situation. You know, it was all pro US. People were very anxious about China. They were very anxious about Europe. What's happened in the financial markets since then? You know, the American markets have tanked. European markets, Chinese markets, UK, they've all done really, really well. So that would have been, and everyone got it wrong. Everyone. I mean, all the brightest minds.
Their lives are a lesson in itself.
In the big investment banks, you know, they've all ripped up their forecast because they got it completely wrong. So flexibility, diversification. Diversification has protected you in that situation, because actually, you know, if you had had a geographically diversified portfolio, if you'd been diversified across different assets, if you'd held some shares and some bonds and some gold and some property and some cash, actually, you know, you look okay 3 months on.
Yes.
You know, if you had been all in on the Magnificent Seven tech stocks, and the US 3 months ago, then you're not feeling quite so happy. So diversification is the second thing.
Yeah.
Exactly the same for business. And then cash, we talked about that. You know, it's, you know,
the rainy day syndrome.
The rainy day syndrome. Have you know, it's the sleep at night syndrome. You know, have you got enough money, cash, that you can sleep at night? And I think if you have those three things, if you've got a plan and you're well diversified and you've got a cash buffer.
Yeah. And I think there are good advice as well, isn't it, is focus on what you can fix and try not to lose sleep over the things you have no control over whatsoever, especially the geopolitical footprint. something that I wanted to mention, because you sparked my thinking, was about a digital currency. Mm-hmm. Because I think I saw, was it one country, was it Turkey, has just announced that they've written into legislation that they cannot in any way, shape or form be just a digital currency. Mm. I could have got that wrong. What are the thoughts about digital currencies? Because so many places now, excuse my voice, so many places now don't even take cash.
Yeah.
Loads of people I know, and I'm one of them, don't carry cash. So are we going in a certain direction of travel?
Well, I mean, it's interesting that we should be talking about this in the week when Spain and Portugal ground to a halt.
Saw that, right?
Because their power systems went down, and everyone was the first thing that people did was they went to the cash point machines to try and get some.
I read about this.
So you know, I think that we are moving in a digitalized direction, which I think is quite dangerous. It you know, we talked about resilience, yes, creating resilience in businesses,
yep,
and in personal finance terms. Creating resilience is so important, and I think that, you know, digital currencies, you know, are potentially problematic in that resilience perspective.
Do you think we'll actually move to just digital, or do you think it's an aspiration for some and the worst nightmare for others, and the jury will remain out for some time?
I think it will. I think the jury will remain out because it could be for precisely that reason, that, you know, it's one man's utopia is another man's nightmare.
Which is so true, right? a lot has been always talked about the power of patience in investing and compounding. And with everything, excuse me, my voice is definitely going today. With everything changing so, so quickly, is that still true? Be patient, or the power of patience is still going to offer you a good return on your investment?
So important, so important. I think it was Warren Buffett.
Yep.
You know, obviously arguably the most successful investor, yep, that there's that ever been, said that, you know, financial markets are a mechanism for transferring wealth from the impatient to the patient.
Right.
And, you know, so the point he was making, you know, is absolutely right, that financial markets have, and economies and the financial markets which reflect those economies have been the most unbelievable creators of wealth in the long run. But in order to benefit from that fantastic wealth creation, you have required patience and the ability to see through the ups and downs of the cycle, because most people don't do that. Most people try and time the market. They try and buy at the bottom and sell at the top, and no one can do that. No one can do it consistently. And the way to benefit from the long run outperformance of assets like stocks and shares over safer assets like cash is to ride the waves. And the best thing that you can do, actually, is to do nothing at all.
That pays a dividend, doesn't it, really?
Yes.
So with everything that's going on, you said earlier, it's kind of my final question, everyone got it wrong 3 months ago. So what's the best piece of advice that you can offer really leaders at any level, entrepreneurs, small, medium, large businesses at the moment? Is it just don't panic?
I think the best piece of advice, yeah, I would give is humility.
Tell me more.
And an acceptance that a lot of what goes on in the world is outside of our control. And that's fine. You know, you don't need, yeah, to control everything, but you need to arrange your affairs to accept that a lot is out of your control. And so, you know, in investment terms or in business terms, a lot of that is to do with diversification, putting your eggs in many different baskets. It's about patience. Yeah. It's about sticking with it. It's about being steady. In investment terms, it's about, you know, dripping money into the market slowly, month by month, taking the psychology out of it, accepting that you don't actually know better than the market, and just going with it. So I think, you know, I think humility and acceptance, you know, change, yeah, what you can change and accept what you can't.
I'm going to come full circle, because you mentioned that a lot of CEOs now have got much shorter tenure. So actually they're really just the custodians for a period of time. They're probably not going to see the full transformation or change.
Yeah.
So in some ways there's a humility there to say, I'm just here for a period of time and then I'll hand over the baton.
Yeah, but do you know what, Adam? That's true of life, isn't it? We're all just custodians.
None of us are getting out of here alive, Tom.
Exactly.
So in that respect, I don't know whether I finished on a hopeful point or a bad one. Let's finish on a point of hope. Help me finish on a point of hope, not my ending. None of us are getting out of here alive. What do you think is the story or the message of hope for everyone right now, Tom?
Well, the message of hope is that, you know, when things are going bad, this too shall pass.
Yes.
You know. I mean, there's a great book about investment, which was called The Triumph of the Optimists.
Right.
And, you know, I think that's such a great description, you know, that, you know, in the long run, things work out. In the long run, it'll be fine.
Time is on our side.
Time's a great healer.
Well, time is a great healer. Tom, thanks so much for taking the time to come into the studio. I really appreciate it. And this is a very timely episode. So huge thanks.
Thank you, Adam.
Join us again next week for more curiosity and insight with the Leadership Enigma. We'd love to hear your comments on today's show, as well as suggestions for future topics and guests. Get in touch with me on LinkedIn or visit us at www.leadersenigma.com. Don't forget to rate, review and subscribe on all your major podcast platforms and on our dedicated YouTube channel. Thanks again for joining the community.